Hey, Moving Forward listeners, I'm excited to announce that I will be teaching a summer session of my writing and self-publishing class through the Johns Hopkins Odyssey program that starts Saturday, June 15th, and will run for 6 weeks. In this course, I'll cover a step-by-step process to ideate, plan, and write your book so you can get it done and published. For course and registration information, head over to bemovingforward.com. The class is open to all, including nonfiction and fiction writers, with special discounts for Hopkins alum. However, space is limited, so enroll now and let's start moving forward this summer on June 15th. Hey, John Lim here. We're moving forward with episode 469, and I've got a return guest, my good friend Angelo Spinello. Angelo, how are you today?
Doing well. Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming back on. I know you've been super busy, and first of all, it's been a while since I've had you on the podcast. I think the last time was maybe a year and a half ago for episode 400, and then prior to that was your audiobook release, which was a couple of years ago. Right. And so, but you've been a regular on the podcast ever since season one, actually. And so you currently hold the record for the most number of appearances on the show. And I don't see that being broken anytime soon, since this is all my right. last season. but we're here to celebrate because you have a new album out.
I do. I just it just came out on Friday. We actually got shirts made up. So I
have, wow. Let me see. Because this is on video.
Yes, you can see. I have the album cover.
That's fantastic. Yeah. No, I've listened to a couple of the tracks. They were great. I know you released Still a couple of weeks ago, and then the full album came out. And so I wanted to have you on to talk about it. So congratulations, first of all. That's really exciting.
Thanks. I think the last time, or every time we've spoken, you're like, okay, so what's the next going to be? And I'm like, I don't know if I had a book in me. So clearly I had some music in me instead.
Yeah. And that was, you know, for anyone who's read your book, myself included, I think there were definite kind of signs and hints in there that you were not done with your musical journey. So I'm excited to hear that you got back to it. So how long has it been since you've cut an album?
The last time I was in the studio was probably like in a studio recording something. I was doing something for a solo artist probably in 2008.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That long. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago. That's crazy to me.
I know.
I won't even do the math on how many years ago that is. So I'll let the listeners kind of figure that out. But that's amazing. Well, Angela, for those of my listeners who are not familiar with you or your story, can you just give a little kind of brief background about you and how you got to where you are now?
Oh geez, So basically I am I'm a lawyer by day. I'm an in-house lawyer. And I've been doing that for about almost 15 years I've been doing that. What I really love is music. And I love heavy metal, I love hard rock, and I've been playing guitar for almost 35 years now. Yeah. And playing in bands, and as you and I were just saying there, I did record originals, and then I played in a cover band for many years. But I've been a lot of places doing a lot of different things, and like we both mentioned, I wrote a book about it. Mm-hmm. You've done the audio for that book,
which was a lot of fun. So
it was fun.
My favorite project that kept me sane during the pandemic.
Yes. I loved kind of our back and forth as we were writing it, and having you correct names like Nuno Betancourt and Gretsch guitars and then just get all the pronunciations just right.
Yeah, especially since I'm not a metalhead to do that. That was the first audiobook I've ever done. Actually, I've done one other since then, but that was the one I cut my teeth on. And it was great for me because it was like a double challenge, figuring out the whole audiobook setup, but then also immersing myself in a world that I'm not all that familiar with.
And for me, it was a lot of homework. Also, having you as an expert consultant on hand on call to help me with the pronunciation of all the different band names, that was a lot of fun. Let's talk about the album. What is the name of the album?
The album is called Inertia. And it's, I guess technically it's an EP because it's five songs. So it's not an LP, which is, you know, usually eight to 12 songs.
Okay, so what's for our listeners, what's kind of the difference between an EP and an LP?
I was going through this. We had a release party the other night and some folks were saying like, what's the difference between an EP and an LP? So at the base level, you have your singles, right? So that's kind of the way things had been done for many years, like in the 50s. And so, and then what happened is the artist would add some more things, more tracks to their record. So instead of one song, you might have three songs or five songs. So it was an extended play, an EP. And then the record companies kind of figured out, hey, we could have these artists put out like a lot more content a lot quicker. And they created the long play, which is the LP. And that's kind of been, that was the standard pretty much until like the music industry died and streaming kind of took over a few years back.
Yeah, and we'll get to that because I really am curious because you used a very unique release strategy for your album. But how long have you been thinking about this? How long was this gestating inside of you?
You know, not very long at all. I haven't had these song ideas in my head or anything. I started writing them back in November 2023.
Oh wow! Okay, so not that long ago.
No, I had played a show with my company's band at one of our company offsites, and I had such a good time, and I'm like, I needed some type of creative outlet, and I was sick of playing other people's music, which is what you do in cover bands, and so that kind of led to me doing this and learning how to, it was a huge process.
Oh wow. Okay, so what was different about this album than the one you did say prior to that back in 2008?
Well, first off, it was all me. Second off, I did it literally all myself. So, although it doesn't sound like Prince, I was heavily influenced by Prince and, kind of doing everything. So all the vocals, all the guitars, all the bass, all the keyboard. And then I did all of the, engineering. I did all the mixing. I pretty much produced the whole thing. I had to take, I took a bunch of online classes for that, to learn how to do it because it's truly an art and it's something that I'm definitely learning and I'm going to be improving with the next album as well.
So in other words, this new album wasn't just you getting back to music. This was you learning a whole different skill set altogether then.
Exactly. So that was scary because like I said, I've been playing guitar for decades. So I wasn't worried about recording that or doing anything like that, but starting to work in the studio by myself and doing it all myself, that was definitely a challenge.
Wow, that's amazing. And for our audio listeners, the Prince influence is definitely there because it right in back of Angela on as well, there are three photos. Are those magazine covers? Were they just stills?
They were from after he had passed away. The local paper in Minneapolis had kind of issues with him on the cover, and so you're able to order a few, so I ordered them.
Oh wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
they're nicely framed, and I'm going to encourage my listeners, check this episode out on Spotify so you can see the video. But that's great. So you got back to it. What about the songs? I mean, I thought the name Inertia, I think, is really interesting. Where did that come from? Did you have that title in mind? Did that come to you later?
It's funny because everything came to me later. Everything kind of was as I was going through it. I was just getting inspired. But the content of that is the song is really about, as you know, my musical journey and my career journey. I've done a lot of things. I've been a lot of places, and every time I've kind of left one of those places, I always have people reach out to me at those places I just left, saying, oh, I got to get out of here. I wish I could do what you do, but it's just the time isn't right. You know, the benefits are just too good here. And I'm sure that you've probably experienced that too, kind of in your career.
Oh, yeah.
So the song is actually about people who are always saying like, you know, the time isn't right. I just got to wait for that right time. And kind of they're just in this inertia where they're just following this path. And the key is you have to kind of to break that cycle somehow. So that's how I came up with this, the thought of Inertia. And it was originally going to be one of those songs that doesn't have the song title in the song, which is a pet peeve of mine, but I always wanted to do that. Now I can't think of it because, you know, we're talking live, but there's songs out there that are called something, but they never actually say that in the song.
Okay.
But then I ended up putting it into the bridge of the song. And then when I was recording, I decided to put it in the chorus at the end.
Okay. Well, there you go. And so yeah. This is interesting because I remember when we were talking about your book, I Am a Professional Metalhead, you had that title in mind even before you started writing the book. So it's mm-hmm. interesting for me, and I just finished teaching a writing class, and I'm getting ready to teach one in the next month or so. And so I've cited your book and use it as a teaching example throughout the course. And, you know, when I covered titles, to me, it was always interesting to me that you had the title in mind before you even started writing it. But here with this album, it sounds like the title came a little bit later in the process.
Definitely. The title, we had a couple of ideas, and everything kind of came later in the process. It was really more about seeing the thought. I started this year with the idea that I would maybe release like one or two songs by the end of the year. But these things, everything just came so quickly, like just the writing process. So I didn't want to have a title or even a project name till I was ready to kind of release it.
Okay. All right. So then this was kind of an unexpected project that kind of took a life of its own.
Right. Well, yeah, because I had to learn a whole new skill set. I didn't know if it was going to sound like total garbage. I really like the way it sounds. Hopefully everyone.
Yeah, I love it. And it sounds, I mean, you know, this is the first that I'm learning about the process. To me, it just sounds like everything was done by a team of professionals who've been doing this for years. So compliments to you. I mean, whatever courses you took definitely paid off. But how long was the entire process from just concept to actually getting the album out? Kind of walk me through that. What was the time frame, and how did you find the time to do it? Because you're a pretty busy person.
Yeah, well, it started kind of in November, right around Thanksgiving. That's kind of when I said, okay, I'm gonna start to put a studio together.
Was it after turkey and you're just kind of sitting there with that post?
Right, when you're
Feast of Seven Fishes, or that's Christmas, right?
That one's Christmas, but yeah.
Okay,
but
you know, you're filled with turkey and stuffing, and the idea for an album comes to you.
I said, yeah, let's go ahead and start putting this stuff together, because it's much cheaper to put together a home studio than it was, you know, 20 years ago. So I did that. And then the other more important thing was I need to figure out how I'm actually going to do this. Like, I could just go on YouTube and watch like a bunch of short videos from people, but I needed to find a course. So I found this place called it's Frightbox Recording Academy. And this guy puts this whole course together, hours of stuff, and he kind of walks you through creating a song. And he gives you the files, and you learn how to mix kind of along with him on video. And then at the end of the course, you could actually send one of your files to him, and he'll kind of critique it and tell you how you can improve it. But so once I had that down, then that's when I was like, okay, let me like actually watch this course and like take the course instead of just like picking and choosing what I'm doing. And then from there, then I just started writing stuff. Once I got the software up and running, I was able to figure out how to record onto the computer, how to get the drum track sounding good. Then I was able to find that inspiration. And because I did it because I knew I was going into winter, and I was like, I'm going to be stuck inside because
live in Colorado too. So you're talking heavy duty winter there, right?
Right. So I live on a mountain, and there's like, you know, there's really nothing to do outside or that I want to do outside in the winter time. So that's where I found the time. So my weekends were just, you know, I'd basically go down into the studio, you know, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. Sometime in the evenings, I would be just inspired to work on stuff. And I got in that state of flow. And you know how it is. You get in that state of flow and you just keep going and going.
Yeah, that's exciting.
But then the funny thing is I became the tortured artist, because as I was doing it, I'd be like, this sounds amazing. next day I'd be like, oh, it's not good. Yes, I had a lot of that going back and forth. So when it finally came out, I was very happy to kind of have it out there.
So in your process, do you have, because I know you know a lot of fellow musicians, you've played in bands before. Do you have anyone listen to it to give you feedback, or do you just kind of work in a silo, try not to get feedback, and just put it out there? What's your process for that?
Originally, I was going to work in a silo, but I'm glad I didn't. I was encouraged not to. So I had two people pretty much. My wife, I had her listen to the stuff and kind of just give me her impression of things. And then I have a friend, Scott, who I would send him files and I'd say, well, what do you think of this? And they were kind of the raw songs before there were any lyrics. And he actually gave me some really good feedback. You know, the song Inertia, I changed the beat. I shortened up the beginning based on some of his feedback. And one of the final songs on the album, Walk Alone, I changed kind of the a little bit of the arrangement based on some of his feedback as well. So it was good to get that. And it was good to have other, I wanted people that I knew would tell me if it was trash or if it could be improved. So I definitely got that out of them.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it definitely, well, the feedback must have been good because it's out and it sounds great. So
that's positive.
So tell me about building. So you mentioned you built a home studio. Is that right? Mm-hmm. In your house? And what exactly goes into a home studio?
The most important thing is your laptop. So with a laptop, you could basically get all the software you needed. So I have it's called a digital audio workstation that I use one that's called Reaper, which is actually open source software. It's fairly inexpensive, but you've probably heard of things like Pro Tools, Logic Pro. There's a lot of Ableton. There's a lot of other ones out there. But once you have that, then you could kind of start building your music. And then the only type of things that you need is you need an interface to plug your guitar in, so that way it goes into the computer. I used some software for drums that it's MIDI drums. So they have like a lot of drum samples, a lot of drum patterns. And then the DAW that I talked about, it comes with everything else that you really need in terms of the, you know, echo effects or delay effects, things like that. So I was able to kind of do it for fairly inexpensive. And I had a bunch of mics laying around from, you know, when I played live. So I was able to kind of repurpose all that stuff. And the only other thing is I built my own little isolation booth in my house. We have
okay, so I was about to ask, did you have to soundproof or add kind of acoustic type prep for the studio?
But I did it fairly inexpensive. We had
like foam egg crates? What was your method?
I had old sleeping bags laying around. I hung them on the walls in a closet, and it removed some of the echo. So when I recorded vocals, it was pretty silent in there. So it was good.
So you did all this basically on one laptop, is that right?
Yeah, the one that I'm using right now, as a matter of fact. Yeah,
that's amazing. So it's just to me that because when I think of home studio and when I think of a musician like yourself recording an album, I'm picturing kind of that image of all the mixers and, all the fancy kind of, computer equipment. But the fact that you can do all this nowadays on one laptop, you know, and is pretty remarkable to me.
Yeah. And like I said, because the last time I recorded, it was back, 15 years ago or whatever, however long it was. And it was in that situation where I was in a big studio with a big mixing board. And now all of that stuff you could do right on your computer. It's amazing.
That's incredible. What was the hardest part about doing all of this? Was it the learning curve? Was it, for you, what was the biggest challenge?
I think the biggest challenge was releasing it to the public, because when I released the book, like people, they just could choose not to. You have to actually go out and find the book and start reading it to experience it. But with the music, it's so easy to just go on to Spotify or Pandora and quickly listen to it and have a quick impression of, do I like it or not? So kind of putting your emotions out there for someone to like very quickly absorb and judge. For me, that was kind of the toughest thing It was like, how are people going to react? Are they going to like it? You know, are they going to play it for 5 seconds and shut it off because they just can't stand it? So, because you know how it is with, you know, things like Spotify. There's ways you go and you could see who's been listening, what they're listening to, how long they're listening to it for. You know, what part is of the music is connecting with your audience.
So what was the, so how did you get over that? I mean, was there at any point, did at any point you think to yourself, you know what, I'm just going to record this for myself. I don't have to put it out there. Like, how do you get over that hump or that hurdle? That's something that I right. talk about in my writing class. You know, when I'm teaching new writers, it's definitely a hurdle. You know, how do you get to that place where you're comfortable putting yourself out there regardless of what the response is?
Because I think what I had to do is I had to remember why I started doing this. I did this for myself, and this is my art, and this is what came from inside me. And I honestly wrote it for myself. I would listen to, I love listening to the songs. I still like listening to them. I was listening to them all weekend. And I had to just take myself back to the, I'm putting it out there because I'd like to share it with other people, but really the most, my core audience is me.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I'm glad that it has connected with people. And there's certain things that are connecting with people. People are reaching out to me and telling me stuff, but, and that makes me feel good, but really the end product for me, just listening to it and be like, I was able to do this. That's the most important thing.
That's great. I mean, that's really, that's inspirational to hear. So let's talk about the release strategy. Cause back in 2008, and I think I still even have a couple of CDs of your prior mm-hmm. albums. What has changed? Like, what does it take to release an album these days? You mentioned Spotify. So kind of walk me through what you do to get an album out there. It sounds like it's a much easier process than it used to be.
It is, because you don't have the physical assets like you did in the past, where you'd want to have like CDs or records or things like that created. You could. It's just that you have to have a big enough fan base to kind of justify the expense. But you know, once everything is done, because you have your final file. So I've recorded it, I've mastered it, and then it's basically saved like a file, like on Google Drive. And you just have to go through a distribution service. So I used a company called DistroKid.
Okay.
And you just,
yeah,
you basically,
I saw that, yeah. That link and that marker in a couple of your social media posts.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good, service. You pay a fee, and I think it's for the year, and then you just upload your music, and then they just, you tell them where you want it distributed, and they just send it to all those places. You tell them the release date. And that's the date that it mostly goes live. You know, you could upload your lyrics and things like that, and then those will show up. And it's actually a pretty simple process. In fact, I'd uploaded my single, and I remixed it because I didn't like the way the mix sounded. So I was able to actually pull the single before it went live, and then release it or resend it, and then they resent it out.
Not all that different than when we were doing the audiobook, really. Just like a lot of the sound file prep and just getting that up there and getting that on release date. So it's kind of the pattern with a lot of content these days, I feel like, you know.
Yeah, the thing is, you just have to have everything ready to go, right? Yeah. So I had the audio files, but then I also had to have, you know, the cover art that I wanted.
Right, done. Right. And so let's talk about the cover art. How did you get the cover art done? Did you do it
Fiverr.
Yourself? Did you hire an artist? What was your
budget? Yeah, I hired an artist on Fiverr. So originally, okay. I was gonna do something myself. Using like some of my photography, but so I use my photography for like my personal shots of me like on Spotify and stuff. But for the cover art, I wanted to do something a little special. So I just found an artist whose artwork that I liked, and I just hired it. And it was a really quick process to get that done.
That's great.
Yeah. Now,
and for our video watchers, can you show the artwork? I mean,
yeah. There you go. If you can see the
great.
The
album. It's got that, a little bit of that sci-fi theme to it. You know, I like that.
It has like a sci-fi theme to it. And then I wanted to tie the, cause the artwork that you see on my shirt is, it ties into the artwork for the single.
Okay.
So for the single, if you look up in the distance of the sky, you could see the comet that's kind of flying on the cover of the album. So it's they're tied together.
That's really cool. No, yeah. It's great. And the fact that, and I've talked about this in my class, you know, when it comes to things like book covers, like you can find freelance artists on sites like Fiverr and Upwork. So it's really cool. I mean, you essentially did all of this. It sounds like mostly from your home.
Yeah, like 100% from my home. And I even recorded guitars in the room that I'm sitting in here, like, because I wanted like nice acoustic sounds with a big, I have a higher ceiling here. So I did everything here. Nothing was sent out. The only thing that was sent out is I sent one of the songs to the guy who I took the course from.
Okay.
And he gave me his feedback.
Okay. All right. So really, it's just like everything was done with your laptop, which again, I'm still kind of blown away by. So what genre, for those who have not yet had a chance to listen to it, what genre would you classify this music in?
It would be rock. I mean, it's definitely rock. I guess you could say hard rock. It has like elements of metal. Like even though I wrote the book, I'm a professional metalhead. It doesn't really, it's not really going to be like, it doesn't sound like Metallica.
Right. And as for those of you who've read the book, including myself, you know that metal has a wide range to it.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. So I was inspired by certain aspects of metal, I think in parts that I created, but it's definitely, I wouldn't call it a metal album. It's funny when you look at what the algorithms characterize it as, or what they say it sounds like, it's like all like late 90s, early 2000s alternative rock.
Okay.
I've seen it compared. They say it sounds like similar to some like Foo Fighters or Weezer or like stuff that I'm like, oh, I did not expect that at all. Right.
That's interesting. Okay. That's cool. So you mentioned earlier, so I've got to ask, you mentioned a little bit, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but future albums. So it sounds like you're planning to do more.
Definitely. Yeah. I have like there's actually a couple songs that didn't make this.
Okay.
This album, I need to work on a little bit more, but I have a couple, I have many, many more like guitar riff ideas. And that's really kind of where I start everything from, is like, it comes from a guitar riff and then I just build the song from there. So I think I'll probably start writing soon. And then,
wow.
You know, the thing with these new skills, the mixing and, you know, the recording, is like, you have to keep it up. You can't just say, I'm going to take a couple years off and then, you know, pick up. It's not like riding
a
bike.
Right. Because by then it's like anything else, right? You got to keep it sharp. Otherwise it's going to get rusty. And then, who knows what the technology will look like a couple of years.
Well, exactly. And I'm kind of inspired to do it now. So that's kind of, it's nice. Because like I said, I've been playing in cover bands for years. So I really wasn't inspired to write anything, because it was like, I just got to learn someone else's music at that point.
Now, for those of you who don't know you, you famously hate social media. I think that's
yeah.
What do you do? Like in terms of, cause you've done, I think, a pretty good job of promoting this on social media. I think you've curated some great posts. So I know you're not the biggest fan of being on, say, Instagram or Facebook. So what was your thought in terms of marketing this? Was it,
you
know, on the one hand, you could have just put the album out there, just say, you know what, I'm just going to be the recluse and not do anything on social media. But you've obviously not done that. So I just kind of wanted to hear what your thought process was with.
I will say that I think most like independent musicians like myself probably hate social media, because I've had a few of them reach out to me and they send me stuff and then I kind of interact with them and they're like, I hate social media. So the way I kind of approached it was, I didn't want to overwhelm people by having like a long kind of like building up ramp, like, you know, 2 months before anything. So I just like a week before the single came out, I changed my whole Instagram page. I removed all of my old stuff. And
yeah,
you did
the tile thing, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I always like doing that. Like when someone's putting out an album and it's like they just give you a little block of it and then you have to go and see the whole tile. I think it looks cool. So I did that for the single, just to kind of let like my Instagram followers know you know, that something was coming. And then I started using the stories because I feel like people like to look at the stories a lot more than just scrolling through like every picture.
Yeah, stories seem to have kind of taken over the algorithm, I feel like, you know.
Right. Well, and plus you could put the links in there. So if
which is a big thing. That's a big thing. I don't think even when we had, I don't think even when your book came out, that was widely available. Now I think that's a great point that you can just link to the album.
So Instagram, but what I didn't do on purpose was I didn't push it on LinkedIn because I have a way bigger network on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So I knew like if I pushed the single, my thought was if I pushed the single on LinkedIn, then when I push the album 2 weeks later, they're going to be like, oh, you kind of get one bite at the apple with something
okay,
like
yeah,
that.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So that's why I didn't push it until Friday, and then kind of that post.
Yeah, and it blew up on LinkedIn. It's gotten quite a bit of response. Now I posted it on LinkedIn, and you know, just because you know that's what I do. But yeah, no, it's gotten a great response on LinkedIn. So let's go back to something that you know you talk about your entire book. Is about right. This cross section between your legal career and your music career. Did you find that people at work were supportive of this? Did you have to kind of like let them know, hey, I'm going to do this thing? I don't know what kind of the confines are of like you being kind of in the public eye outside of your job. Was that ever an issue? Was that something that you had to kind of navigate, or was that just not a big deal?
It wasn't too big of a deal. I think that actually. I had told some of the folks that I was working on it and that it was coming out. So they were very excited about
That's
it. And kind of when I let them know that it went live on Friday, everyone was you know, I got some very positive feedback. So no one was too worried about it. I work for a streaming company. So
yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like you're on brand and on point, right?
Right. So it's not that big a deal. And like I said, this all kind of kicked off because we were at our offsite and we put together a band. We put together a band in like an hour and a half and played for like.
That's right. Two, I like remember you told me that story.
So they kind of knew that side of me. Like they knew they know that there's that side of me, and they knew about the book as well. So it was. I think for them, they're like, okay, this is just Angelo doing what.
This is just
does.
On brand for Angelo.
Right. Right.
Oh, that's awesome. Well. Angela, I don't prepare questions for this last season, so I'm just going to jump into just some random stuff and you know, that I've never really, I want to kind of mix it up a little bit. So I'm just going to throw some random questions at you. So are you a breakfast person?
No.
No,
I just my coffee. That's all I want in the morning.
Coffee. So you don't do breakfast. Are you more of a lunch person, dinner? What's kind of like your meal thing?
I think I would say I'm more of a dinner person just because I like to kind of my wife and I like to prep our dinners together. So okay. It's kind of like it's like almost like a ritual. And you know, breakfast I just want to get quickly. Lunch, it's like when I could fit it in throughout my day. But dinner, it's like that's our meal where we're sitting down together and kind of connecting.
Yeah. So do you cook?
Yes.
So I'm just asking.
Yeah. I'm Italian. I have to. Like I don't have. A
yeah,
choice.
I know. As we've talked about on numerous occasions. Have you seen Dune 2 yet?
I have not.
Okay. You are a huge Dune fan. I think you're the most hardcore Dune fan that I know. I mean, because you've read not only all the original books, but you've read all the spin-off books and. I keep seeing on Goodreads and these titles pop up, and I was like, I didn't even know there were this many books in this entire universe.
Yeah, and so that's why my treat for myself at the end of the year is that I'll see Dune 2 because I'm spending the year rereading all of the books from beginning to end.
Okay.
So the ones that were written by Brian Herbert and Kevin Anderson, those are all like the prequels, and like there's a bunch of those, and then they even wrote some because Frank Herbert, he died before he could finish the entire series, so they had to finish it for him. Although I am a Dune fan, I'm not a fan of the David Lynch version.
Oh, well, I don't think anyone is there anyone who's a fan of that version? I mean, and no offense to anyone if you are. I think it's kind of like if it's on, I will watch it just because what I like about that version is I think some of the visuals are really interesting. Some of the visuals, but yeah, obviously it's not a really good adaptation of the book. But you are a fan of the new one, right? The Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah, yeah, I like that one. And there's even one before that, like the sci-fi channel.
There've been a couple of incarnations of this, right? Because the sci-fi
channel did one like in the early 2000s that I thought was pretty good. But this new one is just unbelievable. Like, yeah, it's just unbelievable.
You are also, and this is not a question, this is just one observation that I'm sharing publicly. You've also recently caught up to Cobra Kai season 4 and 5. And famously, despite my urging you to watch that, you were kind of dragging your heels a little bit on that.
I was. And I was actually really impressed. And now, like I've told you, I have to go back and rewatch like Karate Kid 2 and 3.
Because yeah, yeah.
It was way better than I expect. I think it was season 3, that's where they brought Allie back, and I was like, okay, like I grew up
right.
The original, like everything's tied together. I don't need to see, because I didn't really follow the second and third one as much as you did. But once I sat down and watched it, I couldn't stop. It was so good.
It's so good. And then I don't know. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it, but I sent you the trailer for season 6. It looks pretty incredible. And I think, and for someone who works for a streaming company, I think the release strategy is actually pretty brilliant. Doing a 15 episode season and doing 5, 5, 5, spread out as opposed to kind of just all at once, right. I think is kind of cool.
Well, because it that's like how it was in the old days, and it gives you a chance to kind of absorb it and then connect with people about it, as opposed to like you have to watch all 15 episodes or how many ever and before like you could talk to anyone
before it gets spoiled. If there's a downside to social media, it's just that everything's posted instantly, so you either got to avoid it or mute it not to get spoiled before you watch the whole thing. So
definitely.
Yeah. So what is on your Spotify playlist right now?
I've been supporting a lot of other kind of like independent artists. So that I've kind of connected with online. And then actually my cousin-in-law, he's like a producer. So I've been listening to some of his stuff.
Wow.
So he's like a hip hop producer. Like he's been doing it. Like he's a legitimate producer. He's really good. So I've been listening to some of his stuff, but I've actually not been I don't listen to Spotify as much as I used to, because I rather support the bands through – I use Bandcamp a lot. So
I've never heard of it. Is that another streaming platform?
It's a streaming platform.
I think of American Pie movies when you say Bandcamp. So
I know. And I use that to my advantage for one of my like Instagram stories prior to release. But it's a good place where bands could kind of you could purchase digital files. It's just a way to support them. Even though you could stream the stuff, they probably make more money like when you actually buy a digital album from them than versus listening to their album like once or twice. So, I've been just getting into a lot of like bands from there as well. I'm trying to think. My cousin-in-law, his name is Malcolm Seth, so he's on Spotify, so I listen to his stuff there. But then I got into this really heavy band from England. They're from England or Ireland, but they're called Hand of Kaliak, and they're just like they're like super heavy, like really throaty vocals, but then like really angelic vocals. So it's like a really interesting juxtaposition of the two.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like you're kind of spreading your roots into the more of the indie stuff. And so I've got to ask, I know music is definitely in your future. And again, I'm really happy for the album, but is there another book in your future?
Not yet, but we'll see what happens with the music stuff, because that might lead to something different, just learning these new skills, like kind of maybe this is where the journey goes.
Yeah,
because like, that was the tagline of the book, right? I'm a professional heavy metal guide in my professional journey or something like that. So maybe this is, this is a new place to go.
Yeah, that's exciting. Well, I'm really happy for you. Again, and for our listeners, can you share one more time the name of the album and where they can listen to it?
Sure. So the group is Aspenello, so Aspenillo, which is just my first initial and last name. And then the album is Inertia, and you could find it pretty much on every major streaming platform. So everything, Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Pandora, Deezer. There's stuff I didn't even know exists, but it's out there.
Being in the podcast world, I every other week I seem to hear about a new podcast streaming platform. So it's always changing. Well, that's really cool, Angelo. And I know you hate being on social media, but for those who want to follow you for the occasional post, where can they find you?
It's just I'm on Instagram. So just Ask Vanello. So it's literally the same Instagram I've had for like years. So ASPEN.
Yeah, you're consistent. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I went with this name, because I'm like, well, I've got the Instagram already. So why create a new account?
Why create a new one? We're updated. Well, that's great, Angelo. Congratulations. Thank you for taking time out and coming back. It's great to catch up. Also, I want to extend an invitation to you, because this is my last full season. I'll be ending the show at 500. I'm kind of cooking what I'm going to be doing for episode 500, but part of it is going to be inviting some former guests. So I would be honored if you would come back and be a part of 500.
I would love to, but I would say maybe I could write a song and have it recorded, but I don't know if I could, but maybe I'll be inspired by
maybe you would. That would be honored, but just having you back would be great, and it would just kind of be very fitting, since again, you've been on so many different seasons, including the first one. So, and just grateful for you and your friendship, and, really enjoyed collaborating with you on the audiobook, and just happy for your success, Angela. I'm just, both your career success, but also, to see you get back into music. It's just kind of a joy. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. And moving forward, listeners, once again, you can catch this episode on all the major streaming platforms, many of which Angelo has already named. The video version of this interview is on Spotify, and check out tomorrow's issue of the newsletter, which, as you can probably guess, will be devoted in part, if not in all, to Angelo and celebrating the release of his new album. So, thank you all very much. The mid-season finale will be next week, and I'll have some announcements then. Have a great weekend, and I'll be back next week. Walk alone when I'm with you. Missing the best ever made. I need to reassess. We never walk alone. Walk alone in my mind. Fighting ghosts I can't say. I've come to learn that I don't really walk alone.